In the United States Code, Title 20, Congress finds the following. Disability is a natural part of the human experience and in no way diminishes the right of individuals to participate in or contribute to society. Improving educational results for children with disabilities is an essential element of our national policy of ensuring equality of opportunity, full participation, independent living, and economic self-sufficiency for individuals with disabilities.
Good morning and welcome to the second in our series of podcasts on how state education officials can improve special education outcomes by focusing on results-driven accountability. My name is Andrew Henry. I'm the founder of Red Cedar Solutions Group, and we are the creators of Stepwell, a web-based platform that helps drive continuous improvement in special education with automated best practices and visibility into special education systems, processes, and results. In our last podcast, we talked about quality special education systems. We discussed compliance and the fact that while it's a small piece of the quality pie, it's an important one that can be used to shed light on what we currently know and can inspire our curiosity about why we're seeing what we're seeing. We also discussed tools like the data systems and software produced here at Red Cedar that help give us that window and help us formulate the right questions to ask when conducting activities like root cause analysis. We also discussed the importance of experiential information like surveys and inputs about beliefs and norms that help assess whether policies, practices, and procedures are supporting or impeding our performance. My friend and colleague Beth Steenwick gave us some excellent examples of how the quest for improvement can lead to meaningful change, strengthened leadership, and improved student performance. Today, we're going to delve into how to streamline the process of data collection to allow special education administrators to focus on data evaluation. Joining me is former state special education director from Michigan and NASD past president, Dr. Jackie Thompson. Jackie has a long and distinguished career in education, including early intervention, K-12 special education, and special education program review consultation with districts across the country. I tracked Jackie down last week to talk to her about her tenure in Michigan and what inspired her to invest in data-driven decision-making tools while she was at the helm in Lansing, Michigan. Jackie, when you first became state director, what motivated you to start using data to improve the system?
Oh, Andrew, thinking back to the resources we had at our disposal, I think I was struck by the fact that we had data, but nobody really paid much attention to it. What we collected was something people had to do to meet a deadline and check a box. What we needed was a way to help them interpret their data. We needed easier and more user-friendly ways to visualize data and make it real in order to get people to pay attention to it.
It doesn't surprise me to hear this. At the time you're referring to, I was director of Michigan's Center for Educational Performance and Information. We were wrestling with the same problem in general education. We had a lot of data and a lot of demand from the field for our information, but very few tools and resources to help make the data useful to the people who were responsible for making changes based on what it said.
And in special ed, our approach was to develop what we referred to as a data portrait. It aggregated local data based on a number of priorities we assigned, like suspension and expulsion, disproportionality, child find, etc. This was before the first state performance plan requirements or even the invention of the KPIs. I remember the first time we presented these data portraits at a summer conference of special ed directors. I was new to my position. I was the first woman, and frankly, a number of people were remarkably upfront about their opinion that I didn't belong there. I can remember one of my colleagues from a local intermediate school district who said to me, "You know, Jackie, I'm actually impressed with the work that you've done, but oh, you and your datas." As if I had somehow conjured the whole data portrait thing up. But that was exactly why I did what I did, because in Michigan, we had previously evaluated our whole system based on the notion that we were very good compared to states, that we had better regulations, more robust teacher prep standards and better procedures. But in reality, we didn't back it up with data. We were just riding a wave of self-assessment and maybe self-satisfaction. So the move to data-driven decision-making was an effort to be introspective, to allow us the opportunity to reflect, but to back it up with data. Some people really glommed onto it. In particular, I'm thinking about one colleague who went so far as to corral and engage her peers in presenting about how and what their local districts did with their data and the knowledge they acquired through the improvement process. She became a leader in turning compliance into improvement and making meaningful change as a result of what was learned from the data reporting.
Jackie, can you talk a little bit about the ahas you had with root cause analysis from a state perspective? What did this do for people on a statewide scale?
Well, I remember the first time I showcased a trend in autism eligibility and realized that there had been a huge increase over the past decade, and people couldn't believe it. They were floored. Similarly, the first time we handed out those data portraits to the field, again, in a large audience setting, we planned for a pause from the audience because the data included, among other things, graduation and dropout data for special ed students. What I didn't expect was an audible reaction or a gasp from the crowd, which we got. It was revealing. This was because, among other things, no one had ever considered whether their data was submitted accurately or inaccurately, and whether it reflected their actual program performance. We started collectively asking ourselves, why? Why are we seeing what we are seeing or not seeing? Again, you can operate on opinion and jump to conclusions, but you can't address practices or system design if you don't dig into and really look at your data.
Jackie, do you think that compiling and presenting data helped you foster better conversations with your locals? We'd hope it would lead to collaboration between programs.
You know, Andrew, there's this old story about a chicken and the pig. The chicken cooperates with breakfast by providing the egg. The pig collaborates with breakfast by supplying the bacon. I think it's a good metaphor for how our locals responded to the availability of and the information provided by the data. Some acted as cooperators and some as collaborators. We used to theorize that there were three stages of data-driven decision-making. Stage one, data grieving. It's where you're presented with your data and you take that moment to realize it doesn't really align with what you believe to be true about your program. You might refute the source of your data or the calculation of your data, and at this state, you might try to appeal your data. It's where you come to the realization that the data is in fact what you entered or submitted. Stage two is a form of acceptance about your data. You either come to terms with the fact that you can't change your data due to reporting timeframes, or that the data you submitted was indeed accurate, yours, and a reflection of your program. Stage three is where you become resolute and responsive to your data. You accept it for what it is and make a plan to make sure that whatever caused the data to be what it was in the first place never happens again. Getting through the stages of this process requires collaboration. In order to change, someone has to give something up, change a process, compromise on a policy, reflect on a procedure. It often requires that a member of the team, and by the team I mean data collector all the way to district superintendent, approach the process with the ability to see something new, even if it challenges their own point of view, requires them to be more empathetic, or to give something up to affect change and produce better solutions. Some programs are more willing and more able to be this introspective. At the state education agency level, we were hyper-cognizant of the need that to be introspective of our own processes was so important. Once we started reviewing data, we implemented a statewide data referent group to provide input for us on the data collection process, the accuracy of data collected, and the opportunities and limitation of its use. We had to be willing to be introspective if we were asking our locals to do the same.
So clearly, quality reporting and planning for improvement requires collaboration. Data is just data. It's neutral information until it's given context. And it's the context that's terrifically important. Training stakeholders to be data evaluators, to really explore why we give certain data weight or use it to confirm or refute a position, is critical to program improvement. I'm thinking back to the observation of my colleague Beth Steenwick in our first podcast. She was adamant that we need to use data to inspire curiosity and to make it challenge our preconceived notions and beliefs. She said many times that when we use data to ding systems instead of helping them examine the data and analyze what we can learn from it, we do a disservice to the entire continuous improvement process. That's because numbers are only as accurate as the input, and collaboration means that we look into the efficacy to understand if we're all doing our part. So, how do we make our collaborators better data evaluators and better data investigators? First, we can improve the data collection process so that we have more robust, accurate, and most importantly, the most up-to-date data at our disposal. Second, we can provide data collection teams with tools to help inspire their curiosity. We can provide them with probe questions, context, and communities of practice that help them understand, interpret, and act constructively on the data they have in front of them. Finally, we can help foster collaboration. Our educational systems and their measures of quality often exist in silos. We can help to break down those silos through data to help bridge the most difficult conversations like these. Do we have policies that ensure a systematic approach to high-quality leadership for all learners? Do we have policies, practices, and procedures that ensure high-quality instructional practices for all learners? Do we have a system of ongoing professional development, technical assistance, and coaching that is differentiated in its approach and effective for all learners? And lastly, do we have data analysis and monitor for continuous improvement in a way that improves outcomes for all learners? I'm Andrew Henry, and this podcast and content were created by Red Cedar Solutions Group, developers of Stepwell, a software solution that empowers users to collaborate for results.